Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently. Today's episode is in partnership with Lawyers in House. Lawyers in House is comprised of a team of experienced former in-house counsel who are ready to hit the ground running to deliver world-class legal support that takes work off your plate and makes life easier along the way. Whether you're a solopreneur or a Fortune 500 company or fall anywhere in between, Lawyers in House will meet and exceed your business's needs.
Cheyenne Arnold Cunningham was born and raised in Ontario and currently lives and works as a visitor on the traditional territory of the Cowichan people in British Columbia. She is Métis with mixed European ancestry and is a member of the Métis Nation of BC with Métis roots and ancestry in St. Albert and Lac St. Anne, Alberta, and the historic Red River Métis community in Manitoba. She works as in-house counsel at the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, largely working to support the acknowledgement and extra protection and exercise of First Nations title and rights, while also assisting to support the UBCIC and the First Nations Leadership Council in their legislative reform work to align provincial and federal law with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. She also works as a researcher at the Indigenous Law Research Unit at the University of Victoria, where she assists with project research, workshop and focus group design and facilitation, and application of methods for revitalizing Indigenous laws. With the rest of the ILRU team, she works in partnership with Indigenous communities all across Canada in a variety of Indigenous law projects connected to citizenship, human rights, children and families, and lands, resources, and water. Finally, Cheyenne is the founder and owner of Dakota Law and Consulting, where in her spare time, she takes on additional legal, policy, and academic-based work in areas related to decolonization, legal pluralism, and support for Indigenous peoples to exercise their inherent constitutional and human rights.
So I could not be more thrilled with today's podcast guest. I feel like this is a dream come true. So I'm going to indulge myself and give a little backstory on Cheyenne. So I know Erin just gave Cheyenne's formal introduction, but Cheyenne is like one of the loveliest humans that Erin and I had the privilege of going to law school with. And Cheyenne and I first like met and became friendly because we did the Kwishkwan National Aboriginal Moot together. And I just came to know Cheyenne to be like this incredibly like brilliant, but kind, authentic human. And she recently, earlier this year, came and spoke on a panel at my work and was just so generous with her time in that way. And then after that, I was like, why hasn't Cheyenne been on the podcast? And so we are so happy that she's joining us for this episode. She has such a wealth of experience about in-house work and work like building her own business. And just, I can't wait. So Cheyenne, thank you so much for being here. I know it's weird to have someone talk about you, but like I literally could just talk about you forever because I just think the world of you. So thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So Shai, you know, Erin and I have a good idea of how your career has evolved over time, but can you share a little bit with people who might not know you?
Yeah, so I actually started off my career in retail. So I had my first job when I was 16 as a cashier. And then kind of every summer I would work in retail again. And then when I was in undergrad, I continued with that. After graduating from undergrad, I took 2 years off before deciding to go to law school. So I worked in retail management in Toronto. And then the company that I was working for was actually going bankrupt. So that was actually one of the reasons why I decided to go to law school. And then when I was in law school, I took on some different positions as well. So I worked as a research assistant for a professor. I worked as a tutorial teaching assistant for a professor. And then I summered and articled with the Ontario Attorney General Civil Litigation Office. So there I did work exclusively with the Indigenous litigation team, but I also worked with their team on all different areas of the law. So anytime the Ontario government was sued, the file would kind of come to counsel's desk and then the summers and articling students would support that. So it was a really great experience where I got a really broad range of experience from kind of commercial litigation to personal injury type matters or Aboriginal title and rights issues. And so it was a really great experience. But at the end of the day, I just realized that working for the Crown was a bit challenging for myself, especially as an Indigenous person. So ultimately, I knew that after articling, I wouldn't want to be there. And it has led me to kind of where I am now, which is focusing on what I'm really passionate about, and that's supporting Indigenous peoples in many different respects. So I currently work as in-house counsel for the Union of BC Indian Chiefs. And I also work as a researcher at the Indigenous Law Research Unit at the University of Victoria. And when I do have the time, I have my own law firm, which is called Dakota Law and Consulting, where I take on not only kind of legal aspect work, but policy and academic based projects as well. So that's a little bit of an overview of where I am now and how my career has kind of evolved to this point.
Wow. And can I just say that is super impressive that you have all three of these amazing positions going on simultaneously, and how much work and effort I'm sure goes into, you know, balancing all of that. But since we're on the in-house counsel stream right now, we'll start off with that position, but I'm sure we'll hear a bit more about the other roles down the line in this episode as well. But can you tell us a bit more about what you enjoy most about working in-house?
So my experience working at the Union of BC Indian Chiefs is pretty unique, and something that is really great for my personal setup. I actually just work part-time there, so I have a set of hours that are really flexible, so I can kind of create my own schedule. And sometimes, you know, it's more than the set hours that have been assigned, but I really enjoyed that aspect of it, so kind of that flexibility. But the other things that I really like about it are really getting to know the team that I'm working with and relationship building. So I find in the work that I do, relationship building is extremely important, especially when you're working with Indigenous clients. And it's a really, really big piece of the work. So there's so much opportunity to do that as an in-house counsel, especially if you're going to be there for a long time. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. The other part that I really like about it is I get such a broad range of experience again. So it could be internal governance matters that I might be working on. So working on things in line with the BC Societies Act, so bylaws, bylaw amendments, reporting, all of that. But then we also sometimes intervene in litigation matters. We advocate on a lot of different issues. So we send out a lot of press releases, letters to government. We also have chief counsel meetings about 3 times every year. So all of our members come together, and we have kind of 2 full-day meetings where we discuss important issues and set next steps on what to do on those. And so those are really great to be part of, because I also get to meet so many amazing leaders across what is now known as British Columbia. So it's a great way to get to know people. And especially for myself, not being from British Columbia, it was really important for me to learn about whose land I'm on and build those connections. So the UBCIC has been a great place for me to also do that on a personal level, and to make sure that I'm, you know, doing the things that I want to do as a visitor on these lands.
Shai, I just, every time I hear you speak, I'm your friend, but I'm also your fangirl. It's just too much. Okay. And like, which leads me into my next question, which is, I'd love if you could tell us a little bit more about your experience representing the UBCIC alongside co-counsel at the Public Order Emergency Commission Inquiry, because that was just such like an incredible like advocacy work on your part. And I think it was such a unique experience, especially like so early on in your career. And I'd love if you could talk a little bit more about what that was like.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we will often intervene in a lot of different litigation matters to provide a specific perspective or expertise that isn't typically kind of at the table in certain disputes. So this was a really, really interesting thing to be a part of. And what had essentially happened, if you're not familiar with it, back in 2022, when the Freedom Convoy situation was occurring, the government of Canada declared a public order emergency under the Emergencies Act, and there was some different things that happened because of that. But because of that decision, Canada was essentially required to establish a commission to really look into the circumstances of that decision and evaluate whether the decision was appropriate and effective to deal with the situation at hand. So they sent out a call for people to be part of the inquiry. And after the UBCIC had become aware that there were no Indigenous peoples representing or being granted standing to participate, we then sent in a late submission, and we were granted full standing in the inquiry. So because we had full standing, we were able to participate fully in the entire inquiry. And part of that also involved conducting cross-examinations of different witnesses and federal ministers to ask them different questions. And the main thing for the UBCIC was really to see how Indigenous rights were looked at in this situation, and whether or not the rights of Indigenous peoples were respected by the decision makers. So this was a really great opportunity for me because I had, you know, I'm a younger call, so to have the opportunity to kind of step in and conduct these cross-examinations on my own for the first time was such a great experience. And I had co-counsel with me and mentoring me, and one of them was Mary Ellen Triple-Lafon. And so she was able to really give me some great guidance and opportunity as well in this inquiry. So it was really great. And at the end of the day, the commissioner did release a final report. And you can really see in that report the advocacy of the UBCIC and how our participation really did bring in some issues that would not have been there if there was no kind of Indigenous representation at the table. So we were definitely asking questions that no one else was asking. We talked a lot about the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and brought that in. And some of the recommendations are really aligned with some of the things that we were hoping to see in there. So there's a lot of room moving forward for continued advocacy and implementing those recommendations.
Yeah. And also, I just want to read a little note that you put in your notes to us, because I thought this was so interesting. You said the commissioner wrote, "I would note that I received detailed submissions from the UBCIC on this point. Many of the observations they made were pertinent and should be considered by the government when it develops amendments to the Emergencies Act." And I just thought that was so neat. And thank you for sharing that with us, because it's, you know, you can see the impact of what you're doing, and, you know, really shows that the work that you're doing is going to be used down the line and hopefully to make meaningful change in the future. So just amazing work, and keep up the good work. And thanks so much for sharing a bit more about your experience with us about that. But like, when you were in law school, did you ever dream that you would be doing this type of work, you know, the work that you're doing now? What advice would you give to someone who was, you know, sitting in their 1L class or like right before law school, gearing up to start this fall, and thinking, wow, Cheyenne is where I would want to be someday? What would you say to them?
So it's interesting, because when I went to law school, I was actually really lucky to know what I wanted to do. Going into law school, I knew kind of what I was passionate about. I knew the areas that I wanted to work in, and I was really confident in that sitting in my 1L chair. But as I started to go through law school and kind of the 2L OCI process came along and applying for jobs and dealing with the stress of securing like the best summer and articling positions, it really did disrupt, you know, what I actually really wanted to do and my thinking about what I wanted to do. Being in law school and feeling a bit overwhelmed with the OCI process and all of that, I started to second guess what I wanted to do. And I wasn't sure if there was a lot of opportunity to do the things I wanted to do. And that really stressed me out and scared me a bit. And it started to move me into a different path of different areas of the law that I didn't necessarily think I wanted to do, but I felt like I needed to do that to be successful. Or I felt like those were the things that I needed to do to be a lawyer. And it was hard because when you go through the OCI process and when you're in law school, sometimes it can be really hard to find opportunities in these areas. So you're limited a little bit sometimes in what you can apply for summer and articling positions. So that was a bit challenging. But my advice would really be to stay grounded in what you want to do. And try really not to be influenced by what others are doing, and to take the time to really think about and reflect on what success means for you and what steps you need to take to reach the goals that you've kind of assigned for yourself. I look back sometimes now because there were so many moments where I would think about, you know, applying or accepting a position at one of the big law firms that focus on business law. And I look back on that. And at the time, I remember being so set on, this is what I need to do. I need to work at this place. And even though I would go there and feel a bit uncomfortable and feel like it wasn't the right fit, I still in those moments really wanted to do it. So I look back on it now and I'm like, thank goodness I didn't. And just making sure that you're, yeah, staying grounded in what it is that you really want to do.
I think that's so important. And it's like a part of this profession, but also just a part of life, is like knowing yourself and trusting yourself and like believing yourself. And like, I always like to say, like, you know yourself better than anybody else could ever possibly know you. And I think you've clearly like demonstrated that by carving this like really unique, but like influential and meaningful path for yourself in the profession. And I guess, I mean, I know a little bit about how you went about doing that, but for those that don't, do you mind sharing a little bit about how all of these opportunities came to be? Because they didn't appear out of thin air. I know you like pounded the pavement to make these opportunities like bloom for yourself in BC. And I'd love if you could talk a little bit more about how you went about finding these different roles.
Yeah, so when I was finishing up my articling, I did have a moment where I was like, okay, what am I going to do after articling? Am I going to stay working for the Crown? Or what if I can't find a job? And it's exactly what you're saying, Piper. Like, I wasn't believing in myself. And I kind of was just like, I could apply for a job here, and I probably would get an associate position. Or I can take the risk and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else. And so it came to a point where I ended up just being really strict on myself for that. And I decided to take the risk. And it was scary because right at that moment where I made that decision, COVID-19 hit. So that added kind of an additional challenge to being able to find a job. So what ended up happening is after my articles, I ended up moving to British Columbia for a few reasons. My partner lived here, but also because I knew that in the areas I wanted to work in, there is a lot of opportunity in British Columbia for that. So I decided to move there. And again, it was right in the middle of the pandemic. So people were not meeting in person. And at this point in time, I was not big on networking. I actually had a lot of anxiety in thinking about networking. So it really put me in a position where I was forced to network. But I actually really, really enjoyed it. And so what ended up happening is I started off by just emailing and cold calling every single lawyer that I could think of, not only in British Columbia, but all across Canada, because now we were living in this virtual world. So I could set up Zoom coffee meetings was with a lawyer in Saskatchewan or Nova Scotia or wherever it is. So I made it my full-time job networking, and I just set up meetings constantly. Every day, I started off with Indigenous lawyers, every Indigenous lawyer that I could find. And then in those meetings, I would ask if they had anyone else that they could connect me to. But my goal going into those meetings, they really were not, I'm going to meet this person to find a job, or I'm going to meet this person because I want them to hire me at their law firm. I was going into those meetings being like, hey, I just finished articling, I don't have a job, and I don't know what to do with my life, but I know that I really want to work with Indigenous peoples. What advice would you have for someone like me? And so it was more of like a mentorship meeting and more of a relationship building meeting. And I still talk to people that I networked with today, and it's been 2 years. So networking was a really, really big piece of it. And again, that relationship building aspect and mentorship was great. So through that, I ended up meeting one of my colleagues at the Union of BC Indian Chiefs. And they were kind of like, well, we don't really have a law job at the moment, but we do have a project manager position. And we're looking for someone to work on developing a BC First Nations climate strategy and action plan. So this was something I really wasn't expecting. But after being kind of unemployed for 6 months, I was kind of thinking about my different options, and it was either taking some other positions that were offered in areas of law that I was not interested in, or taking on this position that might not be a lawyer position, but it was something in an area that I'm interested in, and it was a great opportunity for me to build relationships with not only the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, but all of the other people that I would work and engage with in this project. And again, I mentioned this earlier, but that learning piece for my own as someone who is now a visitor in British Columbia, I thought that this position would also give me that knowledge of the land that I'm on, especially on a climate-related and environmental-related project. So so that was about a 1.5 year contract. And what ended up happening is after the contract was done, because of the relationship that I had built with the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, they had actually created an in-house counsel role for me. And that is how I ended up there today. So so yeah, it's been really great in how kind of I got to that point. And I'm really excited that I always have the opportunity to be part of their team.
That is awesome and such great advice for anyone who's looking to either start in the field or transition to a new area of law, and just great overall advice. So can you tell us a bit more about your experience in academia, both as a researcher at UVic and as an adjunct professor at Algoma?
Yeah, so I'll start off with my working at Algoma as a professor. So this was a really interesting experience. So the reason why I decided to take this on, and it was only just for a brief period, was because at the time I was thinking about completing my master's, but I was kind of on the fence of whether or not I wanted to do that. So when I saw that this opportunity came up, and it was actually sent to me by one of my previous law professors, and I saw that it was an opportunity I could take on, I really wanted to do it because I thought that it would kind of give me that understanding of what it could be like to be a professor and kind of work in that academic field, which is essentially, I think, what the goal for me would have been if I were to do my master's program. So I did teach for a semester. And after that, I decided that I didn't want to apply for my master's anymore. It was a really great experience. I'm glad I did it. What I liked about it was that I felt like it it's just such a necessary thing. So the course itself was an introductory Indigenous studies course for undergrad students. And most of the students were actually international students. So it was kind of an introduction to colonization, the history of colonization, Indigenous sovereignty, what Indigenous nations looked like prior to colonization, all these different things, and reconciliation broadly. And then the role of students in that pathway towards reconciliation. So it was great because I thought the course was amazing and thought it was so important. And it's especially important for those types of courses to be taught by Indigenous professors as well. So I really liked that aspect of it. But for me personally, I didn't enjoy teaching as much as I thought I would. I think you really, really need to have a passion for it. And I just didn't have that. So yeah, that's a little bit about my experience with that. And then the other thing that I work with quite a bit is I work at the Indigenous Law Research Unit as a researcher. So I've been there for about 2 years now. And even though it might seem like an academic-based position, it really isn't. Sometimes there's a misconception there because it's an arm's length institute to the university itself. But the work that we do is very law-based. It's just looking at law through a different legal lens. So instead of kind of looking at law through the Canadian legal framework, we partner with Indigenous communities all across Canada to revitalize their laws in different contexts. So I've been fortunate enough to work on different projects with nations, from citizenship to human rights, to children and family matters. And what we do is we work with the community in a very collaborative way. We learn a lot about their laws and their legal orders, and then we create a resource, whether it be a report or an educational toolkit, whatever it's dependent on what the goals are of our community partner. But we'll create a resource of some sort so that their laws can be more accessible and shared and stood up and used in addressing different challenges that they might be experiencing. So I really, really enjoy doing that type of work, and I learn a lot because every project that I'm on, it's like learning a whole new legal order. So I really enjoy that, and I really enjoy the whole aspect of, you know, supporting nations and standing up their own laws in different contexts.
Okay, so Shai, I'm about to sort of put you on the spot. I don't know exactly how to ask this question, but I'm going to get there. It's going to happen. So the first time, I think, feel free to correct me, but I think how we met was through taking Indigenous legal orders with Valerie Wabuse, Professor Wabuse. And it was a 5-person class, and it was in the fall semester of our 2L year. And I remember being so angry that it was a 5-person class. And I remember thinking, like, why aren't more people taking this class? And if you'll indulge me for 1 second, at the time I was on the law school's academic planning committee, and they were also trying to make Indigenous legal orders a mandatory first year course. And at Windsor Law, there was at the time already and still is a first year access to justice course. And so there were so many students that were like up in arms about this proposal. We already have access to justice. Like, now you're going to make us take this other course. And like, part of my role on this committee was to like, I'd be the student liaison and like run a survey. And if I'm being frank, like the survey results were quite racist. And I think also just so focused, students were so focused. And I understand this, like, this is the field I work in now. Like, students were so focused on getting a job. And so students were saying, if we take this Indigenous legal orders course and have to push one of our other mandatory courses to second year, we'll be at a disadvantage trying to get jobs and so on and so forth. And I guess my point is, like, Windsor Law did establish an Indigenous legal orders course, as they should, but not every law school has an Indigenous legal orders course. And I know for me, like, it really changed the way that I interacted with like my other courses and the ways that I saw the law and what even like the law means, so to speak. And so I'm wondering, like, if you could speak about, like, you know, you've you've taught at Algoma this mandatory introductory Indigenous Studies course, obviously like not necessarily an Indigenous Legal Orders course, but in the same sort of vein. And I'm wondering if you could talk about like how you view an Indigenous Legal Orders course being such an important like piece of any law school experience.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up because I had a similar experience when I actually first came law school in my first year. I was really surprised with the lack of options of different courses to take for the areas that I was interested in, so specifically Indigenous legal orders based courses. And I sat on a TRC steering committee with the dean and some faculty, and one of the things we were working towards in my first year was, hey, there needs to be a mandatory Indigenous legal orders course. So I was kind of in the same position as you and really thinking about, hey, there needs to be something here. But one of the things I've kind of found that is common when I talk to people who might be opposed to those types of courses is there's a common misconception that immediately it's like, oh, I'm not going to want to work in that area of the law, so I don't need to know it. But as I talk to people now who are maybe like 3 or 4 year calls, it's kind of the complete opposite, where it's like, I wish I took those courses because I never realized how often I would be engaging with Indigenous peoples. When you think about Indigenous law and Indigenous legal orders, you know, oftentimes people think that it's just one universal law that applies across all Indigenous nations and societies, but that's not the case. There's distinct legal traditions for each individual nation and their communities on so many different topics as well. So there could be laws specific to children and families, laws specific to the environment, specific to water, specific to human rights, or whatever it may be. So let's say if you're working in one of those areas, so let's say child welfare, for example, in the Canadian legal framework, you most definitely will engage with Indigenous peoples who have their own laws related to those matters. So how are you going to know what to do in those situations, or how to engage with those laws if you don't even have that understanding of what Indigenous law is and have that foundational introductory to Indigenous law? So that would kind of be one of the points that I would speak to on that.
All I can say is, Shai, I just have always so appreciated your insights. And I think you, like, I remember, I'm sorry, I'm just like in my feels this episode, because I just like, Cheyenne is someone like I love and respect so much. And I remember sitting in the Windsor Law, it's demolished now because they're about to open a new building. But what was once known as the Upper Pit, could have a better name, but I digress. And I remember once walking into the Upper Pit and Cheyenne was sitting at like a high top table alone. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, and not to out her in any way, but she was watching some like really trashy reality TV, like not like anything anyone would have ever heard of, like just something so terribly like hilarious. And I just remember saying to her, like, I'm just constantly in awe of you. Like, she was like on the side, I think she was like writing a paper, like studying, and then like had the reality TV in the background. And I just remember saying to her in that moment, like, Cheyenne, like, you're going to be, she's going to hate me for saying this out loud, but it's true. She's going to be like on the Supreme Court one day, or like running the world one day. And like, I just like, don't know if I've ever felt that in my bones so much about like a single person. And I remember her like laughing it off at the time, and she'll probably just feel uncomfortable and deflect right now. But like, it couldn't be more true. Like, the work, Shai, that you've done in the time that we've graduated law school is so groundbreaking. And I think sort of what we were talking about, like with the courses, it's not the work necessarily that gets like celebrated, right? Like, it's not the work where, and maybe like, I know you, like, it's not the work that's like, gets all these flashy things and all this flashy attention. And I know though, you just, I don't know it off the top of my head, and I'm embarrassed I don't, but I know you just won a big award. You just won a big award. What was the award?
So it was this year's top 25 woman of influence.
Oh my God. Literally, like, yeah. No big deal. Like, Shai, you make such an impact. And this is just the beginning, which is like so mind blowing to me that this is just the beginning, because it's like, if you've accomplished so much, literally building every niche opportunity for yourself in this short amount of time, like imagine what you're going to do over the span of a whole career.
But we have so enjoyed this episode. We honestly could just keep talking to you for the rest of the evening. But we would love to know, what is something new that you've learned recently? And I know we kind of stole your answer with a new question with that question, but it doesn't have to be related to anything law related, or, you know, could be anything. So what's something new you've learned recently?
Trying to think. Something that I've learned recently, and this is something recent. It's kind of like a constant reminder of something that I'm always having to relearn, even if I've already learned it, is really just making sure that I'm always maintaining work-life balance. That's something that's become really, really important for me, and especially so when I'm pregnant and now going to have a baby. I want to make sure that it's really important moving forward as well. So what I've really learned over the last 2 years is really just to know my boundaries and know my capacities and really know when I need to watch a really bad reality TV show, which is pretty often. So knowing kind of those things about myself and making sure that I'm taking care of myself are things that I always am making sure that I'm learning and not forgetting and keeping that daily reminder of.
Shai, what's the latest reality TV show you're watching?
Ooh, well, I binge watch. I just watched this show. Actually, hold on. What am I watching? I watch all the Below Decks. I love that. All the 90 Day Fiancés. There's like 10 seasons of it, so I don't even know which one. There's like 90 Day Fiancé, Love in Paradise, Before the 90 Days, Happily Ever After. All of those I love watching. And then I've also really been obsessed with watching teen movies lately. So I love like The Kissing Booth, and that's a really good one. So I've been watching that. But yeah, reality shows are still my thing, Piper.
I'm thrilled about it. I love it. That's amazing. That reminds me, you just said teen movies. I love a good like teen TV show. The new season of Never Have I Ever is coming out soon. I think it comes out next weekend. I'm very excited for it. I really can't wait. Like, I'll probably binge it on a whole weekend. So like, I'm right there with you. That was like by no means a slight. It was more like an appreciation for your appreciation of it. Because I remember the show being like, maybe it was Below Deck, but like whatever it was, I had not heard of it at the time. And I was like, Shai is so smart and has the most niche reality TV.
Yeah, no, reality TV is actually like something that I schedule in my life to get me out of my work mind. Like, people think I'm joking about it, but I'm like, no, this is my self-care.
And no, Kate, I saw something and I'm like not going to say it as well as the thing that I read about it, but I saw something recently that talked about how so often, and you have not, like, this is not about you, but like so often women refer to reality TV as like, oh, a guilty pleasure, but like men or people who really enjoy sports don't refer to watching sports as a guilty pleasure. And so like, why can't they be in the same category of like something that gets you happy and like turns your brain off and like away from work and like something you look forward to and like you never know what's going to happen next in both sports and reality TV, you know? So no, I think that's awesome, and I can totally understand why you would schedule that in.
Yeah, reality TV and my monthly UFC.
Oh, okay. Spicy. Interesting. Very different types of television. I love it. Shai, you always keep us on our toes, and it's amazing. Thank you so, so much for spending time with us today and for sharing all of these stories about your career, both in-house and in all of the other incredible roles that you've had and continue to have, and especially your very exciting upcoming role as a mom. And I can't wait to see that in action. So we're so excited for you. Thank you so, so much for being here. We adore you and we can't wait to see what comes next.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you again to our partner, Lawyers in House, a law firm composed of former in-house counsel. To learn more, visit lawyersinhouse.com to see how they can provide insightful, pragmatic, and solutions-focused legal services to you and your legal department.